Welcome to What's Eric Eating, Culture Map's bi-weekly look at all things Houston bars and restaurants. I'm your host, Culture Map editor Eric Sandler. On today's show, we'll catch up with some of the news in the world of Houston restaurants, as well as talk about our meals at a couple of new restaurants you may want to know about. To do that, I'm joined by my co-host this week. He is a Houston hospitality veteran and a co-founder of the Houston Barbecue Festival. Michael Fulmer, welcome back to the show. How are you?
I'm good. Welcome to 2025. I'm excited for this new year.
Yes, Happy New Year. Happy New Year to all the listeners. Thank you for continuing to join us on this little show, this humble little endeavor that we do for you. let us dive right into the news of the week. Topic number one, Chef Austin Simmons has resigned from Triss, the fine dining steakhouse in the Woodlands. The management of Triss responded to this by announcing that the restaurant is now permanently closed. Michael, I want to spend a few minutes on this with you because you and I have been to Triss many times over the years. We know Austin a little bit. I mean, obviously there's one meal that comes to mind when we talk about Triss, but what are some of your memories of dining there?
First off, his collaboration with the Corkscrew family, you know, sometimes we see collaborations being kind of almost incongruent where like two chefs just kind of do their own thing and it just happens to be served in the same setting. You know, there's not really a lot of time for them to come together and work on a menu together, but this was a true collaborative event where they took the incredible quality of what the smoked proteins of what Will Buckman does at Corkscrew, and they integrated into the creativity and the, you know, the expressions that Austin is able to do and was able to do at Triss. And it was this kind of just home run of an experience. And they did it again a couple of times. And I think I went to another one. I missed one, but I mean, those rank as maybe one of the 10 best meals I've ever had. It was that good. And then you and I and our affinity for prime rib is well documented, and I stand by that. That hasn't changed one bit. You know, if somebody is offering it, I'm there. Same thing with you. And I think we were with him dining, and it kind of just came up in discussion. And my birthday was approaching, and I was kind of treat that as like, hey, let's have a great meal together. And he threw it down. He said, look, come up. I'll do the prime rib. And we're like, done. You know, his reputation was well secured. And wow, talk about knocking it out of the park. Talk about an incredible, probably the best prime rib I've ever had.
Yeah, I mean, just to elaborate, that was around the time I had just been to Bluedorn for my mother's birthday. And it was a big birthday for mom. And so we really went all out. And I had this Instagram post where I said, I don't think there's a better restaurant in Houston to celebrate a special occasion than Bluedorn. And this is, you know, cut to the Michael Jordan meme. I think Austin took that personally because he roasted a whole prime rib, like for the seven or eight of us that were there for your birthday dinner. And then he presented it at the table intact before taking it back to the kitchen and slicing it. And he brings it out on this giant plank. Like it's a board is not a sufficient word to describe how big this thing was. And my memory is that the whole dining room got quiet and stared at us because that was not on the menu. Like there was no prime rib option, you know, chef's table side whole prime rib was not something that you could purchase. And I think people were looking at us like, what is that? And who the fuck are these guys? And then we just absolutely devoured the thing. We all took home leftovers. And of course, because it was Austin and because he's always been incredibly generous with his regulars, with people who appreciate his talent, you know, there was appetizers before that. There was a huge dessert board with every dessert in the house afterwards. I mean, I practically needed a wheelbarrow to get out of there. I mean, full doesn't even begin to describe the feeling.
Daddy, I used a gurney. I needed to lay down.
But that's very typical. And those are the kind of meals that I will forever associate with Triss, or, you know, the steak boards, you know, which we got it. And then famously Joe Rogan would show up and get one. And, you know, Joe Rogan called it one of the best meals of his entire life. And that sent the restaurant like up, even though it was already popular and already busy, you know, that attention from Joe Rogan really like set them to another level of success and, you know, revenue. And so it's just, it's a sad that, you know, it's unfortunate that, and let me just say, I have not talked to Austin yet. I don't know what he's working on. I don't know what prompted him to make this decision, that his time at Trist had come to an end, but you know, that this restaurant is now no more is sad, because we didn't just go to Trist for happy hour and a burger. You know, whenever we went to Trist, it was an occasion and we feasted, and that's not going to be available to us anymore.
Yeah. To say someplace is destination worthy, I mean, that's a serious drive, you know, particularly for an interlooper like myself. And, you know, after my first experience there, I was like, there was never any question as to whether or not that would be a worthy experience. I've exchanged a few texts with him. I'm not really sure exactly where he's going with this right now. I know he posted he's hunting with his wife right now. And, you know, I've known Austin a while, and, you know, I see how hard chefs work, and I see how incredibly hard he works, because it's not just Trist. It's the other locations that he helps, you know, manage and develop. And it's a lot. And I don't know to what extent that was even sustainable. I always appreciated that he did something more than the kind of staid sort of steakhouse menu. Like I've seen in several articles it's being listed as a steakhouse, and I never thought of Trist as a steakhouse. I thought it more of as, you know, this is like a high-end dining spot in the Woodlands. That's an expression of the chef, in this case, Austin. And they kind of gave him a sort of carte blanche to express himself, you know, to put Korean-inspired items on there, to be a little more creative, and to develop his own beef program. It was definitely something more than just a steakhouse. And, you know, it will be missed. But with his talent, his work ethic, we're going to see him show up somewhere else, and we'll be there to support him.
No, absolutely. And I think you're right. I think steakhouse maybe doesn't quite encompass everything that Trist was, but I think in some ways, you know, his mentor was John Tizar. He was one of the cooks at Tizar's Modern Steak and Seafood, or Tizar's Modern, whatever it was. They had the brief one in the Woodlands in like the 2010 kind of era. And I think what Tizar did at Knife is kind of part of an inspiration for what Austin did at Trist. And he really did lean into that beef program and worked with ranchers to develop a Wagyu crossbreed that was for a little while exclusive to Trist, and then has since gone on to be marketed other places. But you know, that kind of obsession, that kind of, you know, regular prime is not good enough, or the existing Wagyu options are not that I think I can do better. I want to know more about this product. I want to master this stuff. I want to cook it in the best possible way. That's very much who Austin Simmons is as a chef. And so, yes, I agree with you. You know, whatever he does next, and you know, it's not, again, like I haven't talked to him about his plans. I've traded a couple texts with him, but he hasn't told me anything about what's next for him. So, you know, if that's a restaurant in Houston, that would be very exciting. If he's leaving the restaurant business to dive more deeply into ranching, I would support him in that decision. I would go to any restaurant that serves that beef. And if it's something completely off the board, you know, then, you know, props to him for an epic run at Trist, and, you know, nothing but the best, Austin.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, the one big shock really, aside from obviously him leaving, is that they closed the restaurant. And, you know, I don't know if we'll ever get the full story on why they decided to do that, whether he, you know, didn't have a sous chef who was going to take over, whether the owners were more real estate people and not restaurateurs, and they're, you know, without Austin there, they didn't want to do it. But, you know, maybe we'll find out, maybe we won't, but, you know, I'm going to miss it. That's for sure.
Yeah. It's, you know, I've talked to the media contact for the ownership group, and he said, you know, Trist is very closely associated with Austin, and we didn't think we could operate it at a standard without him. But of course, he was also connected to the kitchen in the Woodlands, the more casual restaurant. That's staying open. That's not going anywhere. They just opened the kitchen at Intercontinental Airport. Obviously, that's not going anywhere. And then Austin did, you know, help them out a little bit with Black Walnut Cafe, which is another restaurant that they own. That's kind of their primary restaurant venture. And you know, we went to the Rice Village location of Black Walnut last year after Austin redid the menu. And it was delicious. I mean, it was very good. So, you know, his legacy lives on in that sense. And I'd go to either Black Walnut or up to the Kitchen in the Woodlands for those pancakes. That pancake recipe that he developed, that I will continue to insist are the best pancakes in Houston.
They're pretty damn good. They were pretty damn good.
All right, let's move on to topic number two. Another restaurant we know well, Burger Bodega, announced that it is opening its second location later this year in Katy. Michael, I've had Abbas Denani, the owner of Burger Bodega, on the show at least once over the years. And he's, you know, it's a restaurant that we've both been to quite a bit the 2 years it's been open. So what are your thoughts on Burger Bodega as a presence in the Houston burger landscape?
You know, it's interesting because, you know, with a burger space, or if you will, if you want to insert like maybe a chicken sandwich, it's almost like they're built for scale. You know, when I remember when Shake Shack opened in New York, and it was just literally a little shack, you know, in the park there in Lower Manhattan, and there'd always be a big long line, and all of a sudden, boom, you know, a couple of them open, and then it's everywhere. And he's been really careful and really concerted about executing at a high level, you know, about getting everything right. And he has, you know, Burger Bodega is just, it's fantastic. I love it. I love the smash burger that he does there. I love the collaborations. You know, Abbas's embracement of the community and the reciprocity that's occurred as a result of it, you know, is not some kind of commercial marketing scheme. You know, if that's a byproduct that it brings more people in, that's great. It's because he loves the restaurant community, he loves the city, he loves the chefs, and his curiosity is insatiable when it comes to, you know, the world of gastronomy. And for him to kind of integrate that into a burger place is like, what? But he's done it, you know, continues to do it.
Yeah, I think that's really what it comes out, right? These collaborations that he's got one with Rafi Nasser coming back tomorrow as you're listening to this on a Tuesday. So he's had the Neo guys in. He's had Chef Mayank from Musafir. He had Alex Al Young, the late Alex Al Young from Fat Eatery there. And really, it's not, you're right, it's not about marketing. It's not about revenue. It's about, you know, appreciation and excitement and enthusiasm for these other chefs and restaurateurs and just, you know, mixing it up and giving the staff a little taste of fine dining, you know, or flavors that they wouldn't get to experience just from being part of Burger Bodega and sharing what he loves with his customers. And I think that's been so exciting. And there's a million burger places in this town. There's always going to be a new burger, something to try. But I think what Burger Bodega has done is proven to be very durable. And it's because Abbas really sweated over getting all the little details right and getting his staff at a place where they can execute it consistently and making people happy. And I think it's, you know, I think about Katie. I mean, there's a Shake Shack out there. There's a Kraft Burger, Shannon Toon's place is out there doing very well. But, you know, I have no doubt that even In-N-Out, right? Like, but I have no doubt that Burger Bodega will find an audience in Katy.
Yeah, I mean, he's a very smart operator. Like you said, he gets all the details right, and you know, there's always room for another burger place because people, you know, people love it, and I love it, and you know, the price point is perfect. So I couldn't be happier to see him expand. And, you know, he's the kind of person you like, everyone wishes for him to be successful, you know, and that's impressive. It's not just like this kind of detached, you know, okay, well, we'll talk about it and we'll make our own little analysis. It's like, if you meet a boss, you know what a good guy he is and, you know, what he represents for the Houston community. And I can't help but want him to be successful.
Absolutely. All right, let's do topic number three. Cafeteria, the bakery in Edo, made the New York Times list of America's 22 best bakeries. You know, this has been like, you know, for Vanner and Cook, the pastry chef and owner of Cafeteria, he had a good 2024. You know, he got nominated for Outstanding Baker as a semifinalist in the James Beard Awards. He finally won the Culture Map Tastemaker Award for Pastry Chef of the Year. And then he ended the year with this recognition by the New York Times. Michael, I know you like a pastry every now and then. What do you think of Cafeteria?
We've talked about, you know, what has happened to the world of bakeries in this town, and that it wasn't just maybe 10 years ago that we didn't really have much. You know, we had kind of had the Three Brothers, which was rather staid, French Gourmet, you know, which represented a price point and didn't really kind of grow with the times. You know, it's still there and it has its niche, but it's in my view, rather limited. And we really didn't even have a really good croissant in this town. And now all of a sudden, I mean, we're living in a world of riches, and cafeteria is just kind of a microcosm of that, with them putting really their own stamp onto it, you know, leaning hard into what their culture is and into what they grew up with, and being able to, you know, R&D these recipes and execute them in a, you know, a commercial manner, which is not an easy thing. So, you know, cafeteria is like, all my experiences there have been great, you know. And doing large scale is somewhat problematic. And it's like, if anything, their biggest problem is keeping everyone happy with volume. You know, like I saw recently on social media talking about, hey, we got to shut down for a day and just catch our breath. And you know, we just, because the demand is so high. And these are really good problems to have. And I, you know, I hope they're able to grow and sustain the quality that they have, you know, because I think they're a great part of the community. And there's something very unique too. You know, they have their own brand, if you will.
I mean, I think that's all well said. I mean, I remember when they opened, I think it was 2019, and they were kind of, Vannerin was doing these kind of stunty croissants, right? A hot Cheeto croissant or like a pistachio baklava croissant. And they still do some of that stuff. And I'm not saying it doesn't taste good, but he's also kind of leaned into, you know, Houston immigrant cooking, and especially his own Cambodian heritage. And that has served him very well, I think, because it really, you know, as you said, the bakery landscape is more crowded and there are more people doing croissants now. You know, you can sort of credit Common Bond for some of that. You can credit Becky Masson at Fluff Bake Bar for some of that. But, you know, they're, you know, 100%. you're competing with the Magnals of the world, or Mademoiselle Louise, or Love Croissants, or Edo, or any of these places. And you know, that beef kolache that he does, that stands out, right? The calamansi tart, you know, all of that stuff. And you know, considering that really all we knew about this guy when the place opened was that he had worked at Tiny Boxwoods for a little while, and then he went away to Chicago and came back, you know, it kind of opened with not bad expectations or low expectations, but just like, I don't quite know what to make of this. And at a time when, you know, clearly Edo's in a moment of transition, we don't really know what the freeway construction is going to do to some of the businesses in that neighborhood, or how disruptive it's going to be. You know, to see cafeteria thriving is exciting, and it has been very successful.
Yeah, and I think it's, you know, to a great extent, it's destination worthy, but also the idea of having a great bakery, you know, or a really good bakery in your neighborhood, you know, that you don't necessarily need to drive way across town for that, is we're starting to see that proliferate in the Houston area. And I couldn't be happier for that. You know, I've got some good ones in my neighborhood, but it's really exciting to see Magnol, you know, expand. Fluff is really well established in the Heights area. You know, and of course, Common Bond has, you know, gone to scale. And I think there's more than enough room to see even more of that. And I'm all for it.
Yeah, no, I have this whole riff on a, you know, a croissant tour of Houston. Love Croissants, Mademoiselle Louise, Cafeteria, Edo, Magnol. Like, you know, you could have a really fun little morning out of it if you were properly motivated.
Absolutely.
All right, Michael, I'm going to say that does it for the news of the week. We'll be right back with our restaurants of the week. Stick around. Michael, for our restaurants of the week, I want to talk to you first about Fieldings. This is the new River Oaks location of the very successful Woodlands Group that has two places up there, Fieldings Local Kitchen and Fieldings Wood Grill. The River Oaks restaurant is more like local kitchen. It's got a European influence. It's got some live fire cooking. It's got a pretty extensive baking program with breads, pastas, pizzas, all that stuff. So let me just ask you, I mean, what were some of your first impressions of Fieldings like when you first walked in the building?
Yeah, this is my first experience at Fieldings. I hadn't gone to their one on the north side. I had some friends who were actually regulars there. That was kind of a go-to place for an upscale experience, but not so upscale that it was like for celebratory only, you know, the idea of anniversaries and birthdays, et cetera, that it was something that could be, you know, integrated well into business meetings, you know, just to have a higher quality meal. And so I was really kind of impressed by the menu, seeing the breadth and depth of it. There's quite a bit, you know, as far as the appetizer list, you know, is pretty extensive. They had something else called the snacks menu, you know, the kind of one or two bites, you know, several salads, and then baking their own breads, you know, doing the sourdough, doing the naan, the focaccia, you know, that just like doing that extra step. There's really some good large scale bakeries, you know, Cake and Bacon and Breadman, et cetera, you know, Craftsman. And you can order from them and get good quality bread. But like, that's just like taking the extra step to do a bread program in-house. And, you know, I've talked about this before. I'm a big fan of breads now becoming a higher quality, but an event that you charge for. There's less waste and there's better quality. Everybody kind of wins in that case. And they kind of dovetail right into that. And I think that's encouraging. Their beef program, you know, I think I had the Bavette. You know, not a cut that you always see, you know, Bavette meaning the flap that comes off the loin, and it's really, really tender, but it has got good flavor. It's kind of just that great blend between what a fillet and a strip can be. And it's more tender, certainly, than a strip. And they executed it perfectly. There was great char. It was the medium rare I wanted. You know, there was nothing else on the plate. We got all these other sides. You know, it's exactly what I wanted. And that's impressive. The sides we got, I mean, the starters we got, you know, it's great that you see on restaurants now, if you open a restaurant or a new place, it's almost like you have to put octopus on there. And that's a great thing. I love that. And they had a really good version of that. I think the one dish I didn't like was the okra.
Well, I think people know you're an okra hater. So, you know, you're not liking the okra is no surprise. And frankly, no dismissal of the quality of the okra, which I enjoyed quite a bit. You mentioned some of the things we ate. You know, I think we were very impressed with the crab cannelloni, cheesy crab pasta. Again, kind of taking those doughs that they make and doing it in a kind of an elevated way. That's something a little bit different. You know, we had the foie gras, which I thought was really nicely prepared. You mentioned your steak. I had, you know, French onion soup. Like we're seeing a lot of, well, I don't know that we're seeing a lot of French onion soup in this town, but we're seeing it more and more places. I know State of Grace is doing one too. And I'm here for it. You know, that's an old school classic. It was a favorite dish of my father's, quite frankly. And so when I see it on menus, I always feel sort of compelled to order it. But you know, that rich veal stock, the cheese, the crunch of the bread, I mean, it's a very good version and kind of shows off that Chef Adele is European trained, right? A French trained guy with a lot of skill and really kind of showcasing what he can do at Fieldings.
Yeah, I appreciated the size of it also. You know, I've seen sometimes French onion soup, it comes out where you think, okay, they should bring three or four more spoons here. And it was really like, it was a hearty portion, but it was really kind of perfect for one, you know. It didn't need to be this massive, you know, bowl, but all of the flavors and textures were still really distinctive. And it didn't need to be something like, well, can I get a to-go container, which for soup is incredibly awkward. I appreciated that. That torchon au foie gras that you mentioned, you know, I think it's listed as a bite. It's a very small portion. And I love torchon au foie gras. You know, it's something that takes like usually about 3 days to make. But it's just so unctuous and perfect without being over the top. You know, it's kind of a perfect little bite. And that was well done. You know, we had really good service. I think it's worth noting, this is a beautiful restaurant. You know, the polished wood, the lighting fixtures. It's got really long, you know, walls of windows so that you get all this natural light in there also. It's right off Westheimer, like the location right there off Wesleyan, you know, kind of just part of River Oaks, if you will. It's a very welcoming environment.
Yeah. And we sometimes talk about useful restaurants, right? Restaurants that serve their neighborhood well. Fieldings is open, I think, every day. You know, they've been sort of getting things up to speed, but they've just rolled out lunch. They just started brunch service. They're open for dinner. So, you know, this is a restaurant that you can go to multiple times during the week if you want. You could, I know that they're planning to do like a juice and continental breakfast coffee situation here in the coming weeks. So, you know, again, like leveraging that baking program, but it's designed to kind of be available to people whenever they want. And there's a humility in that and a utility in that, that I always appreciate in restaurants. And so, you know, I was glad to see this kind of come to that River Oaks area. And I do think, I think it's a good fit for the neighborhood. And you know, we always say, would you go back? I already have my next reservation. I'm going back next weekend to try brunch.
Yeah. I'm eager to try the brunch also. I think it's also worth noting, before we finish on that, is their wine program. They have a pretty extensive wine by the glass program. And what I appreciate about it is you can get the 6 ounce pour or the 9 ounce pour, you know? And so like, hey, somebody wants a high, high quality or sort of an elevated white wine, you know, maybe a Chablis, you know, a white Burgundy, and you can get that. So it's around $20, but you get a smaller pour. And so that's accessible, you know, if you want to have wine, but you don't want to go, you know, over the top with a bigger glass, you can have the smaller portion. You want the full glass, it's there. And then they have another, you know, their full list is pretty extensive too. At first I was kind of like, this is it. But then when I saw that they had the full list, I was like, oh, they're all in. You know, it's the breadth and depth, the verticals they have of domestic. It's not just California Cab, you know, and a few Burgundies. It's pretty extensive. And so I think that'll serve the community well.
Right. Hundreds of bottles and pretty reasonable markups. I know, Kerry Atar, the owner of Fieldings, is kind of that mindset of, you know, I'd rather sell you two bottles at a lower markup than one bottle at a high markup. So, and for what it's worth, Kerry and Adele will both be on the show next week. So we'll dive into Fieldings more deeply, but I did want to kind of get it. I wanted to get it from the consumer perspective before we talk about it from the ownership perspective. All right, let's move on to topic number, or our second restaurant of the week, which is Spacecraft Barbecue. This is a food trailer down in the kind of Clear Lake Webster area, right across from Ellington Field. You're the barbecue guy. Why don't you go first? What did you think of Spacecraft Barbecue?
Yeah, I was dutifully impressed. You know, your first barometer, of course, is what are they doing with the Trinity, you know, the Texas Trinity, you know, the brisket, sausage, the ribs. You know, the brisket was well rendered, had a nice bark to it. The flat and the point, meaning the fatty and the lean, you know, that they had was cut properly and it was good. You know, I liked it. The thing that really stood out for me, though, was the ribs. You know, it just had a good pork flavor to it. There was a light glaze on it. The tensile strength was just kind of perfect. You know, you don't want fall off the bone, but it pulled off just perfectly. So, you know, it had great texture. It had great flavor. You know, they clearly have worked out, you know, what their smoke time is on, and they're sourcing a good quality. So that speaks well to that. They're not doing their sausage right now. They don't make their own sausage now. That they did talk to us about, that is in the future, they hope. And, you know, for anyone listening, that's actually a pretty rare thing. There's only a handful of places that make their own sausage. That's a very, very labor intensive operation. This is three guys in a trailer. Okay. And so to have that ambition is impressive. You know, it was good. It had, you know, the it was good snap to it, good flavor. Where they really started to kind of, you know, put their stamp on it, you know, their personality, I think, was with the sides. I think when we were there, they had a potato gnocchi. I've got to say, in all the barbecue places I've ever visited, in the many places I've gone back to, I don't think I've ever seen gnocchi.
Yeah, you know, I thought that was kind of a funny thing, because I had a friend of mine messaged me, how was the potato salad? And I was like, well, they didn't have potato salad, but they had gnocchi, you know, cacio e pepe gnocchi. And it's like, how was it? It's like, well, that dish, you know, that's a new dish for them. And it's a bit of a work in progress, right? Could have used more cacio and pepe, could have used a slightly, a lighter texture, maybe a better sear, But I like the ambition of it. And I like that they're committed to all vegetarian sides, right? You know, they have these wonderful kind of ranch style beans, and they don't have meat in them because they want to be welcoming everyone. If you're a vegetarian, they want you to be able to have a couple of options. And I really liked that apple slaw that they did on the side, tart, sweet, crunchy, you know, a very fitting counterpoint to the smoke and the pepper and the fattiness of the barbecue. And then you kind of went through all the meats, but we also had the turkey, which I was very impressed with, like very, very, you know, nicely smoked, juicy, buttery, not dry at all. A very reputable meal from Spacecraft Barbecue.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I agree. You know, and it was well seasoned too. Sometimes turkey can have a great texture, but it's rather bland. You know, they salt and peppered it nicely. The pork belly bites they did, you know, that's something that's completely proliferated. It's become kind of de rigueur now in almost all barbecue places. You know, I guess originally started as bacon burnt ends by the Heim barbecue people up in Dallas. And, you know, of course, made famous here in Houston by, you know, Ronnie Killen and his pork belly burnt ends, which to me are my favorite. And theirs was good. You know, it had a good bite to it, really well seasoned. Texture was right there. Spot on. I think it's also worth noting their desserts. You know, sometimes you see, especially with trailers, that's like they'll get something packaged, you know, or they'll collaborate, you know, with an area baker. And here they were doing one. They had the moon pie, which is, you know, that's childhood favorite to be sure. You know, that chocolate with the crisp wafer and then, you know, the marshmallow on the inside and the big game changer here was they added banana into it and just a little bit of Malden sea salt, man. It was, and they're only charging $4 for it. You know, it's like, that's,
yeah, I mean, that moon pie was phenomenal. That's on the short list of my favorite desserts at any Houston barbecue restaurant right now.
Yeah. It's,
and then just for funsies, they were also doing a little chai spiced, apple hand pie, which I thought was like, it's like, look guys, you've got a winner in the moon pie. You don't need to do this, but I'm glad that they gave it to us to try.
Yeah, it's not the usual cobbler and banana pudding. Nothing wrong with that. Those are great. Those are standards. They're saying, you know, this is who we are. And, you know, hearing their story, watching how they execute, leaning into, you know, what they like to do, you know, when cooking with passion, you know, we've seen that be a real good road to success. They understand that it's really hard to start out, you know, they're in a trailer, you know, finding a home, you know, are they going to make the step to brick and mortar? Is that an ambition? I think they mentioned that it is. We had the good opportunity to actually meet their landlord also. And, you know, we don't really talk a lot about the business side of this, but running a restaurant, running any kind of restaurant operation or pop-up, you know, having a good relationship with a landlord, it's really kind of number one. And even though that may not concern the diners and certainly our listeners as much, but I got to say, this guy was really supportive. And this guy's a vegetarian. And he's just like, look, I'm all about supporting quality and excellence. And these guys clearly have it and the passion. And that speaks well to not only who they are now, but to their future.
Yeah. And I think he recognizes that a barbecue trailer in the parking lot of the gas station is a win for him. It's, you know, if everybody's gas costs, you know, within 10 or 20 cents a gallon of everybody else's gas, you know, how do you stand out? Well, let's go to the one with the barbecue trailer. Like, and he'll probably maybe sell an extra six pack or two, right? People pick up a box of barbecue to go. Maybe they go inside and they pick up some beer to take home, you know, all those little things add up and it's a very symbiotic relationship. And you know, the landlord was sort of explaining to us, he's got some big plans for some other real estate developments and other parts of, you know, that Bay Area, Houston. And he thinks that Spacecraft could be a fit for some of that. So, you know, hopefully that relationship continues to blossom and Spacecraft keeps kind of doing what they do and improving their quality. And, you know, we could see them in the mix for things like, the Texas Monthly or even participation in the annual Houston Barbecue Festival.
Even possibly. You know, the bar is really high on barbecue now, you know, since the Franklin Barbecue Revolution. You know, if you open a new place, you know, people really expect a really, really high quality brisket and really high quality sides. And, you know, they're there. You know, obviously there's, you know, they're going to be growing and changing and R&Ding, you know, to an extent. They're pretty aggressively priced. You and I talked about this with Jennifer Fuller, who runs the Clear Lake Food Group, you know, wonderful woman, you know, how it's kind of an underserved barbecue is kind of underserved in that area, in the Webster, Clear Lake, Friendswood area. There's not a lot of it. There's certainly not a lot of quality. And they represent, you know, a real, you know, kind of a beacon for that. And seeing, you know, brisket under $30, putting a two meat plate on there. So, you know what? You don't have to be a barbecue nerd to go there and say, hey, I just want to have good barbecue for lunch. I want to enjoy this and have a good hearty meal of good quality. You know, they've got that. So that's encouraging.
Absolutely. And just for the sake of my friend Jennifer, Bay Area Houston Food Lovers is the name of that Facebook group.
Okay.
They have 73,000 members. But if you want to know what's going on in that part of Houston in terms of restaurants, like that's, I'm a member. That's where I go. Cause no one else is as obsessive about, what's going on down there as she is. Anything else on Spacecraft Barbecue?
No, that's good.
All right, then Michael, I'm going to say that does it for the restaurants of the week. Thank you very much.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's always good to be here.
That's it for today's show. Thank you so much for listening. Join me on Thursday when my guests will be Aaron Bluedorn and Sharif Mboge.